And let's just wait till the. I think the tape is around now. You were saying, you were thinking why they trusted you.
I think I did say it. I think
Oh,
just
okay.
because I was a sympathetic listener, and they must have seen that I saw a lot of merit to their points, and maybe they didn't also want to compromise themselves by appearing in the consulate, particularly when they knew that the consular people were accusing them of having laid the fire that burned down the
Yeah,
library.
or that people would be suspicious if they went to the council. Were you really there trying to convert
Yes.
the counselor? No, you were giving your
Yes.
reports because you're a double agent. So it's better that you go
Yes.
rather than they
No, that's
themselves.
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't just that they didn't feel that they would not be accepted by the Americans,
No, but that their own colleagues would
but
see
their
it. No,
own
that's,
colleagues
I meant,
would see them
again,
as.
you stated it better than I did.
Oh, jeez. Well, this is the active
I'm too
listening.
close to it. Yeah.
Well, it's the active listening thing too,
Yeah.
where
No, that's right.
you ask to repeat and clarify, because it's easy to see the same words and get two or three different meanings, because there generally are two or three different meanings for everything.
Anyway, I think it was the combination of that grassroots experience I had first with the Hamlet schools and then the
That makes
high
sense.
intelligentsia, if you will, of the university crowd and the student crowd in Hue that really informed me on a lot of stuff that was going on in Vietnam. And I think I was, again, lucky to be in a position where I was able to get those kinds of contrasting perspectives, aside from being in two of the most interesting parts of the country.
Ban Ma Thuot and then in Hue.
Well, I was in Ban Ma Thuot just for the month. I was in Lam Dong and then Da Lat.
Oh, I'm
Ma
sorry.
mainly
Yes,
based
that's
in Da
right.
Lat for
Yeah.
the most major part of the
Okay,
time
that's right.
in
So
Hue.
three interesting parts.
Well, the Da Lat and Lam Dong province were both highlands. But that was one assignment, so it was, I consider it basically one area, and then Hue the other one,
Okay,
and some
all right.
Quê
Yeah. No, again, and this time I'm going to stop the tape. I do want this back on
Other
up.
than, and it's, I won't go into it because it's in the book, and maybe in the article, no, not in the article, but
Well, a little bit you could, just to alert us to
the
stuff.
highlight for me of that summer, and that was with Jay Parsons actually, we were invited to join this
Summer of,
65. We were
okay.
invited to join the, I think it was through the Hue Student Union, their summer encamp, not summer, 2 day encampment on the banks of the Ben Hai River, which constituted the border with North Vietnam, the demilitarized zone. And nobody normally was allowed to get near that river. We were camping right on it. And
How'd they get permission then?
well, it was to commemorate July 19th, which was the which they called the Day of Shame, when the Geneva Accords were signed, separating the two parts of the country. And it was an incredibly nationalistic fervor to be expressed that the two countries really should become one. So I guess the authorities felt that there was a virtue to supporting that kind of notion, and to get some propaganda beamed over to the other side to
Okay.
show that they were interested. I don't know what the mechanics of it would be interesting actually to know what went behind the government giving approval for it. But they went right onto the bridge. And I was with them, foolishly, no doubt.
Whoa.
And I was really, then I still did get scared because it was just at dusk. I thought they were going to go all the way across the bridge. And I was being swept along by the crowd, and I didn't know what I was going to do if that happened, end up in North Vietnam. And they stopped at the halfway point, but
Wow.
that, so I was really thrilled that they invited me. And why they did, I don't know.
What
I think,
was
well,
their
we were all
emotion?
about the same age.
Oh,
They
yeah.
just, and they probably hadn't known any Americans who were their age before, who were sympathetic to what.
Yeah, and you certainly weren't a
Yeah.
GI.
Yeah, it wasn't a GI.
Yeah. With all of what that would have meant
Yeah. I
at
think
that
they
time.
saw me as being reasonably fair between the Buddhists and the Catholics and so forth too. And anyway,
Were
that's.
these Catholic kids or Buddhist kids?
I'm quite sure it was the Hue Student Union that organized it, but now I'm not actually positive of that anymore. And whether there were some Catholics along, I don't know. The student union would have tended to be, well, like the country as a whole, for that matter, largely Buddhist.
Right. What was their emotion as they went on the bridge?
Fervent,
that you observed?
Fervent nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam, Vietnam. In fact, they sang Vietnam, Vietnam, which was written by a Saigon, well, a North Vietnamese refugee, Pham Duy, very well-known folk singer, who some people say was paid by the CIA, I don't know. But it was emotion about Vietnam being one country.
Yeah, that's kind of emotional. It really is. It's really staggering impact.
It was an incredible experience.
Yeah. Oh, wow, you were very lucky.
I think so.
Yeah.
But anyway, the weight of all of those kinds of experiences, I guess, is why I was... I'm guessing maybe I was influenced even more than some other IBS people, just because of the weight of all those experiences. But maybe you'll find out that everyone was equally...
Everyone has their own story.
Yeah.
You know, and some things come to people, I think, in a sudden dash of enlightenment, and other people gradually accrue and analyze and piece things together. So I don't want to make any, you know, blanket evaluations.
Right.
But I'm thinking, and I'll throw this out to you, that your real awakening probably started long before the trip back home on the speaking tour.
Yes. You mean political awakening?
Yeah.
And
maybe more than you realized at the time.
I was always interested in the politics of South Vietnam, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was living in Da Lat right beneath the flight path of the planes that would fly the generals in and out when they were either escaping a coup or coming in after succeeding in one.
So, yeah.
And the summer palace, the old emperor's summer palace, was there, so the leaders always came there, and I saw Mo Dinh Diem there, and I have home movies of Mo Dinh Diem too.
Oh, really? Oh, my.
I may have the last one, or almost the last one, because I got him when he was inaugurating the Da Lat nuclear power reactor 5 days before he was killed.
No kidding. Wow.
As close as for me to you right now.
No kidding.
But
jeez,
anyway,
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I just described it.
Yeah.
See his face. But Henry Cabot Lodge, who
sort of did him in,
well,
in a sense.
But I later got to know Lodge. Because I don't know if you're seeing Diana Bowie.
No, not yet. I don't know if I will, but
she's from Beverly, Mass.
Yeah.
And her lodge is from Beverly, Mass. And my whole family spent a few days there in the late 70s and spent an evening with Henry Cabot Lodge and his wife. And actually, there were two different occasions when I mentioned to Lodge that I had seen him on that nuclear power weekend. And he went out of his way both times. Two different times, including that one, that he said, and Diem was just beginning to come around, and then they killed him. And of course, all the evidence is that he was all behind it. So
well, if he wasn't behind it, he was certainly well tapped into all the events and was giving the wink, wink, nudge, nudge,
exactly.
You know, to the generals, yeah.
Anyway,
maintaining
story.
The lie.
So anyway,
to the
I say that only because I was always interested in the politics, but it didn't become as wrapped up in the. Well, as you say, that the awakening did start earlier.
Yeah.
The consciousness was always there, and the awakening came over time.
And during the trip, when it pieces fit together, that what you would observe.
Not so much during the trip. No, I don't want to exaggerate the trip part.
Okay.
You mean the trip home?
Yes, and the speaking tour.
The speaking tour, I mean. No, I heard, particularly in Germany, in fact, Germany may be the only place that I heard these in a couple of different sessions. I must have done a dozen in Germany alone. And I wasn't convinced then. I still thought that what we were doing was basically right.
Okay, all right.
but I heard more of the, I heard the criticisms at least then, than when a few months back in the States, and things kept getting worse over there.
Yes, and then you would hear about
and
that.
And it was being counterproductive. Well, I was watching on TV.
Yeah. Okay, and then through the different lens.
Right.
Or at least through a variety of lenses.
Right, right.
To maybe put it a little bit differently. Okay. Yeah, one of the things that I read last night in your entry into the Rawlings book was about that time on the bridge. And I was going to ask you about that.
Oh, that is in there.
Okay. Yeah, there was a mention of that.
Okay.
So I asked, how did you have a good time in Africa? But there was another thing that you mentioned. The police raid and the Ban Mitut Pagoda in 73, or 63, sorry. You know, you mentioned that you were there with your a Buddhist monk in the temple for your, I think it was daily exchanges of where you just speak Vietnamese back and forth to each other.
And English.
Oh.
Exchange, literally exchange.
Oh, so he would speak in English, you would answer in Vietnamese?
I can't remember if we did it that way or just part of the time we would do Vietnamese and
okay,
part of the time English.
All right, yeah. And then the police raided, and I guess it was in his apartment within the complex.
His, well, monks have cells.
His cells. Well,
I wouldn't call it an apartment.
You did you did in the article.
Did I say apartment?
Yeah.
It wasn't really a cell. It was a room.
Okay.
That's what it was.
Why were they raiding?
He was. If I didn't say that in the article, I should have. But he was giving what they considered inflammatory radio addresses.
Mm-hmm.
He had a weekly, I think, radio program.
Okay.
And he was getting more and more critical of the Xi'an government. And they raided. And ultimately they killed him. After I left, I learned that.
Yes, you mentioned that he had been run over by a military vehicle, and my question, deliberate or not?
Of course, it was billed as an accident.
Yes.
But the
you're fairly sure that it was probably...
The person who informed me didn't leave me much room to doubt.
Okay. Because that's the impression, that's the immediate assumption that I made when I read it, but
it
I didn't want
to
make...
It was easy to have accidents with military trucks, but...
Something could always happen. There could be an accident.
I could be wrong, but I think I'm right.
Yeah, I think you are too. But I just wanted to ask that
question.
That
was a politicizing moment too, that whole experience with him.
Uh-huh. How come? In what way?
Well, I mean, it was an early piece of just seeing the injustice of here, this charming...
Mm-hmm.
Naive, apparently naive, it turns out he wasn't naive, but this beautiful, pure, seemingly pure monk was saying what was on his mind. And
why seemingly pure?
Well, because I think he was a very clever politician, and his innocence.
Okay. But that he was killed just for his own ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
His apartment was raided.
Yeah.
What I saw at the time.
What you saw was the raid on the apartment because you were actually there.
Yeah.
And what did they think of you?
They didn't seem to give a damn whether I was there or not. I was surprised. I was really surprised that they would do this right in front of me.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, get out of here, kid.
No, they didn't say get out of here. In fact, I said, shouldn't I leave now?
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember. I asked the other monks that. And they, of course, didn't want me. They wanted me there to see it.
Yeah,
I would have thought the police would have wanted me to leave, but they didn't seem to care.
Hmm. Because they raided when you were there, did this monk think that you might have had anything to do with it?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I don't think so at all.
Okay. Well, it's a possibility.
Yeah. No, it is, but I don't.
No, okay.
No, they had to pick him up already.
So he was already on a list, and they had already been hassling him and such.
He had been called when I arrived, as I remember correctly. He had been called to the police station, and I was told by the other monks that he'd been called to the police station after it was going to be late for our lesson.
Oh.
And then he came back. They brought him back.
They, the military.
The military, the police, whichever it was, brought him back. Well, now I'm like, whatever I wrote is correct, because mm-hmm. I took that from my letters at the time. But,
okay.
But he had already been under trouble before they saw me there.
Okay, all right. So you really were...
The main thing I remember is the other monk who had hidden the tape recorder under the, or the radio, I forget which it was, under the pillow where they didn't look.
They had a tape? They were taping the raid?
No. Now, that would have been clever, actually. Yeah. I forget whether it was, whatever it is in the book was correct, but they took either a tape recorder or a radio, but the other one, the monks hid beneath the pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Where they didn't look.
The book and you're talking about is the Unheard Voices. Yeah, I was thinking about the Rawlings article.
The Unheard Voices, okay. I think. But then when the police left, this monk very cleverly lifted the pillow and took out his triumphant, his beatific smile. I wish I had a picture of that.
Yeah. Well, what were the monks trying to do? I mean, I'm asking this almost for myself now, because in 63, I was still in college, but upperclassman, and I'd see all this stuff, and I was wondering about it. Actually, no, I wasn't upperclassman, but I was, was wondering about all this stuff. And it would have been like freshman, maybe sophomore. What was their?
Well, they wanted what they saw as a Catholic regime to allow the Buddhists, I guess, some of their own dignity and role. They thought that they were being discriminated against, I think, basically.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm sure it was more complex than that, but that was, mm-hmm. I think, the nub of it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
the family was Catholic.
Yes, I know. Yeah, and I can understand
the
how they
have the prominent positions. And...
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the way that it came across in the news here at the time, which maybe you didn't know, was that it was, of course, that it did come across the media here was true, yeah. But it was presented as though it was a national uprising against a corrupt regime without as much of the religious difference between the protesters and Diem as was in case...
I was sent home, copies of the New York Times coverage at least, mm-hmm. and I think in 63
mm-hmm.
it was portrayed as a religious thing. I mean, the monks were burning themselves for freedom of religion, I think. Later it became a corruption thing. Or maybe there was some corruption tied to it, but I think Buddhists, more the ones who immolated themselves, I think it was for religious reasons. They weren't talking about corruption, at least at the top of their list at that point.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe
but
my
they were right. I mean,
are...
they were descriptive. Well, it's a matter of when who was feeling what when.
Yeah.
So all those things were true, and I.
Okay. Okay. Well, I wouldn't have been reading the Times because I was off in school in the Midwest and didn't necessarily read that, so mm-hmm. would have been off the television.
Yeah,
which would have been far more superficial than the Times, believe it or not.
Okay.
Anyway, okay, yeah, actually that's the way students... moving on a little bit, though, in time, and this is post-IVS... What did you do for Senator Kennedy in terms of your trip back to Vietnam?
He was looking for someone who knew Vietnam to be part of his advance team and then group in the country when he came, because he had been royally, not quite sure what the right verb is, but he had messed up when he'd gone in 65 on a tour and had been duped by the embassy,
yeah.
in his view.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
he wanted to avoid a repetition of that. So mm-hmm. he got three lawyers plus me as his advance team. One of the lawyers had negotiated the Cuban prisoner exchange for John Kennedy. The other was a close friend of Bobby's.
Mm-hmm.
And the third, I can't remember. what his exact connection was to the Kennedys, but and I guess his office has asked IBS, Arthur Gardner, who was head of IBS at the time in Washington, whether they could think of somebody who might be appropriate for that kind of mission.
Mm-hmm.
So he suggested me, and I went up and was interviewed by Kennedy for this, and didn't hear for a long time, thought, you know, they decided not to go ahead with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a few days, I think it was, even before I was to leave, I got a call and said, we're leaving Monday or something.
Do you want to go?
Oh, no, the assumption was I was going.
Oh.
At that point, I had to get some approvals from, they thought it was quite, my graduate school thought it was quite comical that I would think I should think twice about whether I should go, or said, go for it and jump at the opportunity.
Where were you in graduate school? I think you might have
Johns
mentioned
Hopkins.
It was Johns Hopkins.
It's
okay.
Sice in Washington.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, I remember asking the dean and...
Yeah.
I was worried about how I do my exams and stuff. Anyway, this was more educational, I'm sure.
Yeah, screw the exams. God. So what was your role along with these lawyers?
Two of the lawyers... Well, our role was to set up his itinerary. He was gone for 13
mm-hmm.
days, which was unheard of
mm-hmm.
for any congressional trip.
Yeah.
And it was in his role as chair of the subcommittee on refugees and healthcare, I think, I forget the exact title. But
yeah.
So he really wanted to devote all his time to those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he needed some background on the political context and so forth. So I forget how we did this, but eventually the four of us each took one of the corps in Vietnam and did mm-hmm. the advance work individually in those areas, and I got the third corps, which was the area around Saigon. So, which I'm not sure was my first choice, but it did mean that I hooked him up with the politicians and was along in all of that part, so that was actually quite an eye-opener for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm going to ask you why.
We went 2 weeks before he came.
Mm-hmm.
And set everything up, and then each of us accompanied him in that particular corps
right.
that we had set up.
What kind of what did the American officialdom in at least your corps, so you don't have to talk about the others, what was their response to you? And this mission that they were soon going to be visited by with Kennedy coming.
They were nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ted Kennedy was considered at that point a stalking horse for Bobby, who everyone, was he already running then, or everyone thought he was going to run?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe he hadn't decided to run yet.
But there was the potential.
Presidential election.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, there were high stakes in that visit.
Yeah.
And, I had forgotten this entirely until Adam Clymer from the New York Times called me a couple of years ago, and he's doing a book on Ted Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to interview me because, first of all, he had picked up that was a seminal piece of Kennedy's political development, that trip, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he reminded me, which I'd forgotten, that Kennedy really didn't want the press along. He went out of his way not to have press coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in retrospect, was fascinating. I mean, even at the time, was unusual, and in retrospect, was fascinating that any politician wouldn't want it.
Yeah.
Of course, he ended up probably getting at least as much and a better one for that reason.
Yeah.
But
why do you think he didn't want it?
I'm guessing partly because he didn't want to risk if things didn't go right again. If things went again the way they had in '65 when he got poor press. And secondly, maybe he just thought he could find out more and he would control the press coverage by meeting with them on his terms rather than having them following him all around and making them... I think it elevated the seriousness of the mission
by
having it not appear as just a press-oriented gimmick.
Yeah. So, like leaving the boys outside and the men are going to go in and talk turkey.
I wouldn't have put it that way. I think he just felt that he wanted to control the coverage, maybe.
All right. Yeah, I was putting it in an extreme sense, and I was...
Partly that, and partly... No, partly I think, because Kennedys obviously were prone to doing things to attract press coverage, and
mm-hmm.
that really wasn't his purpose.
In this case.
In this case, in a direct way.
That he really wanted.
And he didn't need it. I mean, he's a Kennedy, he's going to get it anyway.
That's right. So. Yeah. Were they, was anyone in the officialdom in Saigon, do you think, and this is your speculation, nervous, not just because Bobby was being positioned for a possible run. Oh, it's the daughter. I bet.
Just finished the sentence.
But also because, gosh, I'm going to have to finish the sentence after the phone call. With the ringing, I can't think. Pause. Passing the torch in New Jersey. Okay, tape's back on again. And I've formulated the question, because the original question, your answer just a moment ago before the phone call, told me something that I didn't anticipate when I asked the question, because I was thinking more of the reaction of people at the American Embassy, not so much because of the potential Bobby Kennedy run, but because of because they knew that they and or the military had given Ted a runaround earlier.
I don't know if they knew that.
Ah, okay.
Or if they were conscious of it.
Okay.
It would have been a different group of people 2 years later, for the most part, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that, but I thought the memory would have lingered, like, oh God, we can't snow him this time.
Oh, I think they still hope to snow him this time.
Okay, they still were trying. Okay.
No, the I do have some feedback on that, though, because when I moved up here,
oh,
much later, of course,
yeah,
I got to know Ellsworth Bunker a little bit.
Oh, my goodness.
Was a neighbor.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I frequently see his son when I pick up the Sunday morning paper. I was a little late for him today. But
uh-huh.
He, I mentioned, somehow it came up in conversation. We were having dinner somewhere with other people, and I mentioned that I guess that was the first time that I'd met him, was on that trip.
Mm-hmm.
And this wonderfully urbane, distinguished old gentleman, he was in his 80s by then, I guess, he said, oh yes, I remember that trip. He never really came to see me. So I was surprised, because I knew that he had picked Kennedy up at the airport when he arrived, and they'd mm-hmm. ridden in together, and I knew that he'd had a private meeting with him. I wasn't even allowed to be in on that. Mm-hmm. It was just the two of them. So I didn't want to get into an argument with him. He was such a lovely, if misled, person. But I don't... That told me that the official Americans were miffed that he had given relatively short shrift to the time he spent with the official community, and had spent probably in preponderantly more time with opposition people or with others. Because I tried to get him, my assignment was to get him together with Vietnamese, for the most part, with NGO people and a broad diversity, whereas I think Bunker was still assuming that it was the embassy crowd that ought to, and the official crowd that ought to be
totally in control.
He wouldn't have said it quite that way.
Yes, I know. I'm saying it.
with a much greater preponderance.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
So.
No, because I've heard how they would always try to manipulate, in a sense. This is my word now.
Yes.
The visiting politician, sure, who didn't know anything, and give him the right impression, and you know, well, we got him this time.
We had those sessions. I mean, he met with General Weigand, who was, although he was not quite, he was more real oriented, I think, than some of the people. We had a fascinating time with John Paul Vann.
Oh, really?
He met with Westmoreland.
Mm-hmm.
Whom I recently met at Mrs. Bunker's funeral here, by the way.
Oh.
These things, really funny how they come back to live in later times. But he met with Bob Comer. So he met with all of the official people. It wasn't so he didn't meet them.
Did you know Comer too?
Through those meetings.
Through those meetings. Oh, okay. All right.
Or I was in a New Year's party once where he was outrageously drunk. And, but the...
I've always had negative vibes about him.
Yes.
Pretty strong.
But he also met with the former Prime Minister Hung, who told us basically for the first time, I think, he had told anybody in the U.S. government, I'm guessing, about his links with the other side.
Mm-hmm.
We met with Tung Tut Tien, who was the leading newspaper publisher.
Oh, yeah, I think
Who was third force, I think, at least.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, well, then we met with a bunch of senators who would have been, you know, the leaders of the South Vietnamese government from that side.
Mm-hmm.
Did he meet with the prime minister? I don't. He must have, but it's funny, I don't remember that. Must have met with her. Anyway, so he met with a broad variety of people, a lot of NGO people, including IBS people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I wanted to have him meet my student leader friends, but I think he was just so exhausted at that particular night that we had thought about doing it. But he really covered the waterfront.
Was he pleased also with the other work that the three lawyers had done in the other zones?
Yes, and I was too. I mean, I remember asking his aide, who was the chief person, that I could say almost anything to. Well, I could have said anything to Kennedy too. I think he's very easy to, or was certainly very easy to talk with. But I probably let out what good are these guys who don't know anything about Vietnam going to do you?
Yeah.
And he said something about, well, lawyers are supposed to be able to are supposed to be trained to be able to do anything.
He said, see.
So two of the lawyers got there 3 days before the fourth lawyer and I arrived together.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth lawyer, no, the third lawyer.
You're the fourth lawyer.
I'm the fourth lawyer. The third said on the plane to me, when I guess I was letting show, not very diplomatically, my doubts as well.
Uh-huh.
He said, well, we'll see if all this training we get is supposed to be good for anything. But when we arrived and I heard what the two had...
I'm still...
How slow I'm
going. No, I'm fascinated that I'm finding it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'll be... one person in particular was in Honolulu, who you wouldn't know because he was in Laos and just at the end. It was a struggle to finish an hour. Yeah. And then other people's... you know, it just goes. But yeah, go on. I'm sorry.
So where were we?
About how quickly they picked up these first two advanced men
who had already made... Yeah, and they brought different things to it than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it worked out fine.
Yeah. Because I just wondered what he had really picked up.
But it was what was fascinating when you asked me before, what was so fascinating for me about it, was fascinating, A, to see how a congressional trip works.
Yeah.
For one thing, but and also obviously particularly how a Kennedy works.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave me access to all those people at the top, which I hadn't had at that point.
Mm-hmm.
At the head of the South Vietnamese government and of the American
mission.
Well, we'd had sessions with the ambassadors before, so that wasn't totally new, but it just was a totally different perspective.
Was it impressive?
It was that building and everything else before is actually, I think without that trip, I might not have had the confidence to do the book.
Really?
Even with Don.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, that mix of experience that between us, then we had both had from those different vantage points between us.
Mm-hmm.
Then I thought...
Then you could bring something to it.
Because otherwise people tended to say to me, well, you just don't know the whole story. You haven't seen other sides of it. And I remember once in graduate school, at a dinner sitting next to Bill Bundy, who was then the Assistant Secretary of State for Asia, dealing with Vietnam particularly. And I was burdening him with the benefits of my support for the Third Force and extreme doubts about the current U.S. policy.
I'm sure he appreciated that.
And he was very gentlemanly.
I'm sure he was, yes.
And, but you know, we'd had enough meetings between Don and me with... Well, the Kissinger one was one of them, but others who just made it clear that we didn't have access to all the range of information that they did.
Yeah.
And I, of course, thought that we had access to a range of information that they didn't.
But they don't recognize your information as valid.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So anyway, that trip gave me the confidence that I did have some access to information at the levels that they were talking about.
Yeah, I know what you know. Yeah. Were you impressed at the Kennedy approach?
I was impressed that he slogged it out with incredible commitment and intensity. I mean, he really was just one refugee camp and one hospital after another.
And not on a photo op.
And it wasn't a photo op because there were no photographers or no journalists for the most part. And, well, he wanted to build a cumulative case, I think. And, so, yeah, I mean, I have to mix feelings about different aspects of things.
Oh, sure,
you
know, yeah.
But as you always would. But, no, I thought it was a successful trip, and I thought he was brilliant to focus, as he did, on those humanitarian issues and to make the case through a prism, which was basically the IBS prism, in terms of the humanitarian piece of what was going on and the effectiveness or ineffectiveness of the policies that would ultimately undermine the other, the basic fundamental policies of the U.S. Government. So I thought that was brilliant. And
it was for a politician in the United States who didn't know all of what you had known. To be able to figure that out was brilliant.
Well, even knowing, I think it was probably brilliant from a political point of view to figure out that that was a good, a politically good way as well as a humanitarianly
good
way. And of course, he had Bobby. He knew Bobby was going to do the hard political stuff. On the geopolitics of it. He was staking out his own piece of it, which he thought could help and contribute. I'm intuiting this. I'm sure it's right. He never said it in so many words, but it's pretty clear, I think.
Absolutely clear. Now, I asked this last question. I'll pause for a second here.
The other thing that may or may not have been clever politically was I remember that Johnny Appel, the New York Times, when Kennedy was, just before his plane was getting in, he asked me if I had been one of the IVS people who resigned Vietnam policy. And it occurred to me that I wasn't, because I was leaving anyway. I didn't tell him that, I just said no. But it occurred to me that whether that could have been a politically damaging thing if I had been one, that it would have seemed as though his team was too tainted or something.
That it was anti-American and things like that.
Yeah, or anti-war to begin with and wasn't objective enough.
So you answered correctly, although not necessarily for the reason that he was thinking.
Well, I answered the truth. And my guess is it was probably somewhat better. I don't know if he would have made a big issue of it otherwise, or if anybody else would have.
Yeah, you never know.
And I don't know if Kennedy was concerned that, or would he not have taken me along if it turned out I had been one of the ones who resigned. I don't know. Maybe, because we had those people had written a letter to Bunker complaining about the war effort. So, anyway.
That might have tainted you. That might have gotten you off the list. Yeah, it really may have.
Or it might have gotten me on the list and then been a little counterproductive to him. But anyway,
But I think he would have been smart enough to know that it might have been counterproductive and would have tried to find someone else.
Yeah.
And only would have settled for you if there was no one else of equal utility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well anyway, that's the Kennedy trip.
Yeah. How well did you know John Paul Vann? About the same as Comer, or a little better?
Well, more than Comer, but I can't say I knew him. We spent a very intense evening with him.
What do you mean intense?
Well, I remember sitting around the dinner table, having him regaling us with stories of how badly the war effort was being waged. And Dave Burke, who was Kennedy's principal aide, whom I referred to earlier, not by name, but kept prodding him and saying, "Well, why are we giving up then? It's not going to work." And he was sort of a, well, he was, Burke was always the one who was playing the devil's advocate, but in fact, I think he was also the devil because he believed.
If you believe, we should get out,
He sort of just listened to all of this, which I thought was also interesting how they did that. But
I think they probably do that often on a lot of things.
And a lot of politicians, I'm sure, do it too. But Burke, you couldn't suppress Burke anyway. I liked him a lot, actually. He was really very assertive. And
have you kept in touch with him?
No. He was president of, was it CBS or ABC News for a while, and somebody just told me the other, I guess it was Adam Clymer from from the Times told me where he was now, and then stupidly forgot.
Wow.
I kept up with Kennedy more than I did with him for a while mm-hmm. between them. Anyway, he kept probing him, and Van just couldn't come to the last conclusion that might as well give up.
Yeah, right.
And the book, have you read The Bright Shining Line?
Parts of it.
Yeah, well, I've only read the part that was excerpted in the New Yorker, I have to
okay.
say. Although that's a pretty big part.
But yeah, it's a pretty damn big book. That's why I've only read parts.
But I think this all is recounted mm-hmm. in that he just saw it. Had a very good instinct and intuition about what was
going on. Oh, you mean that dinner?
At that dinner, he expressed
that,
himself.
That dinner is recounted in the book?
No.
Okay.
That I don't know. It wasn't recounted in the Marker piece.
All right.
I did, I talked to Neil Sheehan at some point mm-hmm. when he was mm-hmm. writing it, but
right.
Actually I don't think he put anything. That is where Kennedy became fairly important in the book.
Yeah.
And that is when Kennedy first met him.
Mm-hmm.
But, because I know that Van came to see Kennedy then periodically afterwards whenever he'd come to Washington.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was being pressed, Van was being pressed very hard. How can you believe this is going to go anywhere with all the stuff that you're reporting is being done so badly?
And yeah, Van's, even if you get your wish list on how to run it right, why would it work?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he could get his wish list if he mightn't have been able to do it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't remember it coming out that quiet. It was so clear that his wish, whatever wish list he had, wasn't going to come, so that wasn't even the issue.
Yeah, okay, all right.
So, and then for some, so there was that was the major part of the dinner conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then wine was served, which didn't happen very often in Vietnam. And then, for some reason, I still can't fathom, Van put us all into his, or some, a few of us, actually, just into his car. I think there were probably only three of us,
mm-hmm.
Kennedy and me and
Burke.
Maybe Burke, or Jeep rather,
mm-hmm.
and he took us off on this late night ride into the countryside.
What?
Which I to this day I don't know why, and maybe just he felt like going for a spin, and he'd had a fair bit of wine.
He brought Kennedy along.
Yeah, there were four of us in the Jeep. Maybe even a fifth, I can't remember.
Wow. I mean, that's kind of insecure.
I thought so.
God, I'd mean, be terrified.
It, it
I mean,
was, you know, it wasn't far out of us. It was on the road to Tuduk.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean,
and,
you know, you've got...
He probably felt it was somewhat secure, but I remember feeling a little bit nervous about it.
Yeah.
But he was supposed to be a big... He probably had his gun along, whatever good that would have
done. Yeah, big deal.
And then we went in a helicopter somewhere with him.
The same night?
No, that was the next day,
okay,
I guess.
All
right. I remember he kept putting his hands all over Kennedy's knees when he was making a point of some sort. Kennedy was not comfortable with that at all. You could see in his body language at the time, and he talked about it later, or mentioned it later.
Well, was it
and
common?
And of course, when I read about the...
Was it common to do the knee touch when talking with Vietnamese?
Van's not Vietnamese.
No, but Van would have... Talk to Vietnamese and maybe have gotten acculturated into the body language use. No?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. Because in Peace Corps I did. It would be not uncommon at all to grab or touch or pat somebody's, you know, another male's knee while you're talking to them.
What I thought about when I read the Bright Shining Lie later was his homosexual experience that he'd had. I wondered.
Okay.
I wonder if he'd gotten any of it from there. Or could it, I just got in my imagination.
Hmm. Okay. No, because
anyway, that's an anecdote that goes nowhere because
it just does. Okay.
And I can't even remember where he took us on that particular trip. And I'm so mad. I thought at the time of keeping a log of that trip, and I didn't. I'm very mad because that it didn't seem at the time as interesting as it does now. As it did immediately afterwards, even. I didn't realize how much I was learning at the time.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, I remember a fair bit of it.
Yeah, that it does. We always think of these things in retrospect.
And Clymer showed me all of everybody's notes that he'd been able to collect from those who did keep a few notes. Not that they were very good either, but
mm-hmm.
I brought a little bit back.
Yeah. What about the mass resignations that went on? You said that you didn't resign after all. You were leaving anyway. So you decided not to.
Well, these were all my friends, Willie Myers and Gene Stolzfus, and,
mm-hmm.
So I was pretty close to them.
And I'll be seeing both of those folks.
You will, good.
Yeah.
Gene in Chicago and Willie in Iowa. Well, there you get
Gene,
your
definitely.
Mennonite background.
Hmm?
There you get your Mennonite insights.
Oh, yes, I know.
The two of them.
Yeah, but I'm interested in your insights, too, of what they were thinking and doing in the discussions.
Yeah. No,
your
they,
own,
they
your
came
own.
From different places.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will be interesting.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I was very close to them, both personally and in terms of the feelings. And I can't remember if I was actually involved in the editing or something at some point of it, but...
The editing of the letter to Bunker.
I think maybe the letter itself I wasn't. I thought it was stronger than I would have put.
Mm-hmm.
Don will tell you that I was much more moderate even in the book than he would have, than he was.
So well, we do have, some, that's one of the values of co-writing. I think Mark and I are going to find that because we're going to come at things from different angles too.
So, yes, in fact, people periodically used to ask how it is that we managed to
survive each other.
Survive each other and get an agreed text out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think both of us were right at parts. I tended to think you could get further with the establishment, influence the establishment, if you didn't beat him over the head, which Don mm-hmm. tended to do.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I was duped by Kissinger in that meeting we both had in the White House with him, and Don wasn't. So I admit that Don was right on that, that sometimes you have to beat him over the head. And although with some, I think it just depends on the circumstance, who you're dealing with it, which approach you take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the anti-war movement made its big contribution in that way because they were exerting raw political power, basically. Although I couldn't agree with many of their positions, the extremity of their positions.
Yeah.
I mean, basically they were saying Hanoi was wonderful and pure and good.
Mm-hmm.
And we were evil and crass and everything else, and that wasn't my view at all.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think that they're the ones who created an opening for the, what I would consider more reasonable middle ground to, or objective or whatever, I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, how did we get onto that? There was something.
Well, I was asking you about the group of volunteers who resigned.
Oh, the resignation, yeah. So I was...
And you knew Gene, and you...
So I was very much involved with him, and it was done in September, and I remember suggesting, I think erroneously, that it be distributed just to the New York Times at the beginning, whereas probably it should have been a full-scale press conference, but none of us had any experience with that. The New York Times correspondent was very sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it did get picked up through the Times News Service.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, I was advised, actually, by the Washington Post correspondent that we should have done a press conference.
Really?
Or they should have, that it might have gotten. I don't think, maybe it would have gotten out more. Certainly the Washington Post would have felt better.
Yeah, the Washington Post guy would have liked it a
but
little
it
more.
But it may also be objectively true. Anyway, that I wouldn't have taken that extreme an approach, but I'm glad they did what they did, and I think it was...
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, the right thing. And I was leaving, so it would have been, even if I had felt totally comfortable with the extremity of the phraseology, it would have been dishonest for me to have resigned because it was, would have been clear to anyone who looked at my contract that I was due to leave then anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, how many people did resign?
I think it was four.
That's all? I thought it was more than that. I just,
No, I think others have left. I mean, people like me, for example, when we left, we would join the anti-war movement.
Yeah.
And then in 67, when I was asked to come back on an AID-funded trip with to bring a group of American college students designed by AID to brainwash them into supporting the war by the time they got back again here, it was clear that that wasn't going to happen, that, it was, that any exposure they would get there would work the other way, as indeed it did.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think the actual resignation was Don and Willie and, did Don? I can't remember really.
Okay. Well, it made the newspapers with the names, I think. So, are you going to look something up? Okay, I'll pause for a sec.
Yeah, Don.
There, I'm turning it back on again.
Don resigned and Willie and Jean. And I forget now who the fourth one was.
Don Luce and three other staff leaders resigned from their positions. 49 IVS members signed.
Yeah. In support of the four.
In support of the cause.
Yeah.
It wasn't in support of the four, per se.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it doesn't say who the fourth one
is. Yeah. Yeah, I really should have brought my own book so you could have signed it. But, yeah, because also... Steve Swift said that he decided not to join too because, you know, he was leaving as well, I think, at about the same time. Or no,
Hadn't he just come? I think he had...
Or he was also worried about his draft status. So I didn't want to put his name
on
it.
Well, I remember Bunker at the time said that anyone who signed wouldn't be able to ever join the Foreign Service.
Well, at least Steve didn't care about that, but, you know.
And I think even anyone he said who was involved.
In any way.
I was later invited to join the Foreign Service if I would go to Vietnam. I said, no, thank you.
Yeah, right. For, here's, Don wrote this to you, April 24. Okay, couldn't see
but
his
that, that's a, that's a commentary on his...
For John, whose radicalism is inspiring... who sees so clearly what the evil establishment is doing. To Dr. Spock. And whose weakness is in naming books?
We had an enormous controversy over whether it ought to be called The Unheard Voices or Unheard Voices.
Oh, no.
This was a frivolous dedication.
Yes, of course, and between friends, sharing an inside joke.
But I'm just saying the radicalism is, he was clearly the more radical.
But still, yeah.
No, it was fine.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
He also had a much bigger impact.
On the book. Or on,
no,
generally.
On Ending the War, I think.
Yes.
No doubt.
Well, even Graham Martin mentioned Don and Bramfman is causing the destruction of the American effort in Southeast Asia.
Right.
That's a little overblown,
I just
perhaps.
I showed you that since we were talking about signing the book.
Yeah. Hang on for just a second. Another pause. I think it's another question time.
Yes.
Okay, because we're pretty much exhausted the topics that we were doing. So I'm going to go back a little bit.
Okay.
During the IVS experience years. What, first of all, describe the position team leader. What does that mean? Because I've had a couple people describe it, and it seems a little, like it varies a little bit. And then what did you do as a team leader?
Team leader was supposed to be responsible for the supervision, general supervision of the volunteers in the particular region for which one was team leader.
Okay.
The assignment was somewhat muddied by the, what I would call the anomaly that there were also associate chiefs of party, I think is what it was called, for education and agriculture.
Yeah.
And those people were to serve as the substantive supervisors or helper, or, you know, upper level helpers, or, and the team leader something else. I found that distinction a little confusing, because how did you draw the line when you were meeting somebody between you should talk to them about, if I were a volunteer, do I talk to this person only about how to conduct myself in my classroom or in my potato patch, or do I, what about all my other considerations that nominally were under the team leader's purview? So that was a little confusing, I think. But so in that respect, I'm not sure that anyone really felt, at least I never felt, whether I was literally the supervisor or just somebody who was kind of a counselor or something. So the lines of authority were a little bit unclear.
Okay, yeah.
To me, which wasn't a horrendous problem. And what I ended up basically doing was... the placements were largely done by the associate chiefs, if I have the title right there, because they were the ones who had the connection in the school and so forth. Although in the case of Hue, for example, where we had three volunteers at the time that I was there, one in forestry and two in education,
I was there as kind of a backup and support.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would travel occasionally, well, particularly when I took over from Pete Hunting, I would travel and visit other volunteers with whom I wasn't obviously otherwise living.
Yeah.
And just check up if everything was going okay. But mm-hmm. It was not, as I'm re-recognizing now, just saying this, not a terribly well-defined role in my view, although it probably did some marginal good in terms of helping people, you know, have somebody to bounce ideas off or experience off of. In the case of the Summers group, which was quite a large group, which I was responsible for, they didn't
the
have
the Summers group?
The Summer. The oh, summer yeah, of 67.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, okay.
The student group. Again, I think the placements for the most part were done by people who were already in different parts, and particularly mm-hmm. since I was coming over just before the group, I wasn't involved with the placement assignments. But I was involved in giving kind of the oversight to the group in general. But again, even then, they sometimes found it more convenient to respond to the team leaders who were there
mm-hmm.
in the region directly, so it was a little bit muddied even there, too.
So your area, because it was geographically defined rather than tech defined,
right.
Was the first corps area? Is that the same as the first corps in terms of the geographic designation that the military used?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, from DMZ down below Dalat a little bit, or not so far.
No, not that far down. It was the DMZ to through Quang Ai province.
Okay.
Well north of Dalat still.
Yeah. All right.
Jean was the next region down.
Okay.
The second corps.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say about that? And there were not that many volunteers in the first corps region. Oh, and I had my own job at the same time. So in fact, I ended up spending a lot more of my time doing my work with the student groups.
Mm-hmm.
It was a joint assignment because it wouldn't have justified a full-time team leader.
Okay, because of the scarcity of volunteers in that region at the time.
Yeah, there were the three others in Hue, I think. Or actually, there were four others in Hue, and then maybe later on one or two in Da Nang. And I think that was it at the time
mm-hmm.
in the first corps. But then when Pete Hunting, just a few months later, was killed, then he had third and fourth corps.
Okay.
Willie Myers left at some point. I can't remember now how
the
sequence of it, but I did a little traveling around in the Delta at that point too, and in the outskirts of Saigon. So then it became a little bit more time-consuming.
Oh, absolutely. So you wouldn't have to see volunteers frequently to do this team leader business.
Well, some needed more, as you would expect. Some of it was squeaky wheel stuff. Some needed more than others.
Okay.
So,
what would they normally need?
I think just the benefit, partly, it's interesting how little I remember of all of this. It must have been fairly inconsequential
in terms of
the larger experience.
Yeah.
I think some of them just needed some backing, the feeling that somebody on the staff, that there was somebody in the staff who really cared about them, what they
mm-hmm,
were doing.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I frankly didn't feel when I was a volunteer. I didn't feel that I was getting any particular support. I didn't feel I particularly needed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it did seem to me a bit odd at times that nobody ever bothered to visit me who was in a position of
any
authority
kind of,
over me.
Yeah.
As I said, it was fine, but I was surprised. And I guess sometimes I could have used just a verification that I was more or less on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part, I think part of it was psychological backing, and occasionally there were some administrative things to take care of. I honestly can't remember much about that aspect of the whole experience.
That is kind of strange.
I don't know if that means anything much or not. I think it was a large part of it was because of the confusion of the roles of the... The disciplinary and the regional.
I'm seeing now that that my own confusion and team leader might have been between Vietnam and Laos, because there I think it was more tech area.
I don't know.
Oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, because when I spoke to Steve, he definitely said it was in the first corps. And he had, you know, the area that he was a team leader in and went around to talk.
Steve?
Swift.
He was a team leader?
Later.
Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
That would have been later than your experience, because he was there somewhat after, I think. So we talked about that, and he described it in the same way. But I heard other people talking
about it. Described it in the same indeterminate way?
Indeterminate way, and also that you were there to show the concern of the organization for the volunteer and see if they had any problems and such. When you were a team leader, did or any time in your experience, was there anyone who had to be evacuated for their own benefit?
Don't think so.
Okay.
We had one or two problematic, or two or three problematic cases, but I really...
Problematic for what general reason?
Oh, you know, just having personal difficulties or personal quirks that made their positions a little tenuous.
Mm-hmm.
And I really remember very little about this. I think probably maybe the larger point is that the Vietnamese part of my role there was so overwhelming that this all pales by contrast. That might have
well,
been part
yeah,
of
it. I know, but we're just trying to dig out some of these things too. And I asked that last question that I just did because in the Peace Corps experience, every once in a while, sometime someone would have like a nervous breakdown or something through the culture shock and began to lose their identity and they were medevaced out, which didn't mean medical.
Right.
You know, it meant that they were having some severe psychological stress. And I was wondering if that happened to anybody.
Like that. I was only in this role for a year, also.
Well, still, that would have been enough. And you, as a volunteer and someone there, you would have heard, you know, because I knew a couple of people in the Philippines who were medevaced out.
Yeah. Well, and of the year that I was in that role, March or April, whenever I got to Hue, into the fall, was basically doing the student stuff. So in fact, it was barely 6 months that I was in a more exclusively team leader.
Okay, and semi-administrative role and position.
Yeah, so in fact, it was really quite a short period, plus that summer when it was administrative and not thing at all. But that was more straightforward administration, making sure that things were in place and the volunteers were doing what they needed and wanted to be doing.
Okay. Yeah, it's just I saw the team leader as one of the three things you itemized for your...
It was my job, but I'm now realizing this, as we're talking that in terms of my experience and the impact on me, it was probably pretty minor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it seems that way. And compared to some of the other stuff, you know, the being with the students on the bridge, I mean, absolutely.
Right.
That's,
and
that's,
even with the Montagnard as they're seeing their first school opening kind of thing. You know,
Right. Yeah, far more visceral in its impact than spending a night with a volunteer asking them about how they're doing. You know.
Yeah, I remember there was one guy who was a language teacher in the Delta somewhere and just went on for hours processing arcane, to me, linguistic theory things. And he needed to do it, so I was there.
So that was your job to listen and smile. Okay, yeah. Well, I think that probably was important for some volunteers. Whoops, this one's ending now.